time so we can play among the stars. Come and see what war was like before the coming of Sigmar. In other words, here they are. In other words, that old world charm.
Hello, one and all. Gather round the fireplace, put your feet up, pat your dog. It's time to FAQ review. We are back with episode 14 of That Old World Charm, baby. And I have the wonderful triumvirate of the old world in tow. That being Peter the Falcon. Hello, brother.
Hello.
Excellent. Another wow. Sterling effort from Peter. We're all so, so very happy he's here.
I'm very proud. And
sweet me, Danny McDevitt himself. Hello, brother.
Hey, what's up, man?
Good. We got FAQ. We were going to be, so we had our patron vote in the Discord, and they voted for our next army review to be vampire counts. Mm-hmm. And we were deep into the nines on getting that underway when slap, bang, higgity damn, we got a freaking FAQ, a holistic FAQ for every faction in some way, shape or form. Rather than saying every faction that really required one, and a main book FAQ as well. And good Lord, is this an exciting thing to have, 4 months into the edition, give or take?
Dude, we got fact not once, but twice.
Technically three times, because there was a day one fact.
Yeah, you're right.
And then there was another fact not long after. So this is our third FAQ. So far, all of them have been color-coded in the main rulebook, at least. The legacy ones didn't get bullshit.
But correct.
The main ones, they're actually like black was the first one, blue was the second one, purple the third. I like that. It's at least now I know when the changes happened.
It's a fabulous system. And we all love a good fac. Everyone likes the fac in the morning, the evening, the afternoon, facing multiple times. It's a good old day. Anyway, as two-part podcast, first part lovingly assisted by King Priest Dickie, who is our editor, and we love him. Thank you. Our last episode was actually done by Seamus Ronan, who is
our babies.
He's very much one of my babies. I pay him to edit another one of my shows, and I like to think I'm helping him get through college. So part two, you can find us over at That Old World Charm over on Patreon. Get involved. A lot of conversation, a lot of moving and shaking in our Discord, a lot to be discussed and examined from these FAQ changes, because this went above and beyond just answering questions. We have army balance being performed. This is more than just how does drilled work. This also was, man, you know what we really shouldn't let happen? Warriors of Chaos Dragon Riders having 2+ armor save. And so they fix that. They fix stuff like that too. So I'm so much even more excited to see that than I am just seeing, you know, some rules clarifications, because it's showing that they have a holistic approach to the health of the game and they're willing to adjust things.
Yeah.
Should we, and they believe they're out of hand or unintended. Danny, is that just supercharge your excitement for the game?
It makes me a lot more excited. I'm glad that they're paying attention to stuff. I hope that this is kind of a sign of that that kind of project like scope expansion that they talked about a little bit, and I hope that this is a continuing trend that we see in the future, because I think these are all really good signs.
Yeah, totally agree, Peter. What are your thoughts?
I'm in the same boat. I really I've heard through the grapevine that this was something that was going to be happening. Regardless, that we were at least going to get this FAQ. I'm hopeful, and I've heard some whispers that this is like the first of many, that they're going to try to pop these out at least every 6 months, which would be absolutely fine. I'm absolutely fine with. I would love three, but I'll take six. It's a really exciting time, because this FAQ is one of the best FAQs I've seen Games Workshop put out for any of their systems.
I totally agree. Yeah, totally agree.
Very happy with it.
It's really good.
So covering on this episode, it is probably going to be a pretty linear expression of the FAQ that you could expect. We're going to be reviewing it. Not absolutely fine tooth comb extensively because that would take too long to and would probably be very dry. So we're just going to go through main book changes of note, supported army changes of notes, arcane journal changes of note, legacy army changes of note, and then biggest winners and losers, what is missing, and our favorite change each. And now that we've given you our initial thoughts, let's jump straight in. We're very lucky and very blessed to have the resources of the Falcon and his affiliation with Goonhammer, who we should also mention as a big thank you. We love being involved with Goonhammer. And but he has done a very extensive article over there, which you should all go check out. And seeing as I have, you know, very limited time, I actually read that more than I read the FAQs. So maybe you should do the same also if you ain't got the time to trawl through and try and extrapolate what this line of VCR instructions actually means when implied to the game. But main book changes of note. Danny, what's first on the pile for you?
Well, I mean, naturally, I'm going to look at my own armies first. So the first thing I looked at, I looked at my Orcs and Goblins because I'm building an Orcs and Goblins army to see kind of like what changes there were for that army. Mm-hmm. And luckily, not that many, which is great. I think that's actually good news for Orcs and Goblins as far as like a faction.
Yeah.
I think that it puts them in, they were already in a really good place. And now, like, I think they're in an even better place. And the drill change, which I kind of knew was coming, but that was a big deal for me too.
So Falcon, what was the clarification there? Is from what I can read, it just doubled down on it playing raw, as in you play it raw and that's what it is. Or am I off of my
interpretation? Well, it's more rules as written than I think anybody even expected.
Yeah, it is.
So the question that it's as part of the FAQ is, although it cannot make a charge move, a unit in marching column can declare a charge. Why is this? And then there's like, it feels like an 18-page diatribe on how drilled actually works. It's actually only like five paragraphs, and there's a second drilled question that also kind of covers into this. But it basically, what it boils down to is, you can, with drilled, you can redress ranks before any kind of movement that your unit can do. And essentially, if the model moves, it counts as movement. It's not just charges. It's not just moves or random moves or anything like that. If you have the drilled special rule and you give ground, you can choose to redress. If you have the, which is the one thing I didn't expect them to allow.
Yeah, me either.
Because give ground specifically says you're not allowed to do any of that. It's like written in the rule book, you can't. So the fact that drilled bypasses, that's interesting to me. You can do it on fallback and good order, which you can do a full reform on fallback and good order. So it's not great there, but counter charges, it looks like you're going to be able to do a redress if you like. It's so drilled becomes even better than I already kind of thought it was.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to like improve, give a slight quality of life improvement for a number of armies, like dwarves and chaos dwarves in particular.
Yeah.
But also, it's going to stop all the arguments, because this was probably the main rule that was argued, everywhere ad infinitum, since the game came out.
It's an uneven inclusion into the game. Like I know many armies that have zero options to take drilled units, and some armies that have drilled units that are just trash and you would not take anyway. And then some armies that are like, all my best units have this rule. And so what the issue was, you'd be playing against a player who's very much wielding this rule and wanting to have it to its maximum ability. And then players with no access to it being like, you should not be able to do that. I can't do that. That's absurd. At least now the arguments are dead, but my God, it feels like they buffed drilled. It feels like they genuinely clarified drilled and then buffed it. And that may end up feeling bad in the long term when people get very good at using this rule and very good at wielding it. And guess what? I'm going to make them do it, by the way. I'm none of this lazy stuff of like, oh, I'm just going to put an extra two guys on this side. I'll take care of the back ranks and put them out later. I'm like, no. Box on you, big boy. Fix them up. Fix up those ranks. Readdress.
They also added, and I think this was very smart of them and very well thought out, and this goes into the frenzy change, or the frenzy clarification. that you can't use drilled to get out of like impetuous or frenzy. Yes. Because yes. Now what they've said is essentially, unless you're using a unit to block your frenzied unit, if your frenzied unit has any way to maneuver to make a charge legal, it will do it. You have to do it. So if you have drilled and you put yourself in marching column to try and void a frenzy charge, you're shit out of luck, because the game is basically saying you are forced to redress make that charge. Yeah. And I really like that. I think that's a very clever thing and very important thing to do. It's unfortunate that the wording on the skirmish screen part is such that some people are still confused by it, but that's fine.
Yeah, that is some trash wording. But I read that and interpreted that as, yes, I can block impetuous units and frenzy units as long as I don't declare a charge with the unit in front. That's pretty much how that boiled down for me. And that's pretty much saying that if there is a chance that the unit in front that you are using to block your impetuous and or frenzy can move out of the way, then you have to declare a charge with the unit behind. But as long as you, like, in all of preparations, be like, I'm not declaring the charge with the unit in front, then you're totally fine and move on with your life. But man, did they have to write chance in there just to confuse people?
Yeah. I mean, I think Danny hit the nail on the head in our chat and Discord chat about it, with like, because impetuous is a thing. There is a quote unquote chance that even with you not saying I'm going to charge, that they'll get out of the way. The other reasoning for this is if you do declare a charge with those skirmishers, you still have to declare with the guys behind them, because there's a chance that the skirmishers, the way they charge, will get out of the way.
Correct.
Yeah.
Danny, baby sugar honey, we mentioned in the green room that there is a clarification that if you have a unit in your army books that's not taken as allies or mercenaries, you have a unit in your army book that is drawn from another book. And the example here is the Black Orc or Black Orc characters being drawn from the Orcs and Goblins book. They now get to take items from that parent book. So they don't get to take items from the Chaos Dwarf book, is that correct?
Right.
Or
right.
Do they get to double dip and take either either?
From the book you draw the unit from. So, which is pretty interesting, because that lets you put some Beasts of Chaos items and warriors as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. What are the implications here? What are the wider implications?
Yeah. There's not a ton of units that are shared between army books that have the ability to take magic items, although I will say the capability to take magic items is far expanded in this edition past anything we've seen before, right? So I think it's kind of an interest. It's definitely an interesting concept. I think that like it makes the Chaos Dwarf army like much better, right? Like I think that was like not a secret stealth buff, but like just a buff to Chaos Dwarfs, and that was already a good list. So it makes me excited to see kind of how people are going to feel that. Cause like a Black Orc, Wyvern, War Boss, also you get a unit of Black Orcs with Orc banners. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. Like that's
crazy. Real good.
So
yeah, exactly.
That's
right.
That's like a top 10 unit in the game. That gets to go at full power now in a Chaos Dwarf book, which is great for them.
If I'm going to say straight out, I actually didn't like this. I think that he should just, that Orc War Boss should just take Chaos. They should have written items into the Chaos Dwarf book to, you know, benefit that character in that book and just kept things simple. Because I feel like this has abilities to be problematic, especially if they get deep into the nines on some of the arcane journals, you know, down the line where we could have, you know, further crossovers between Chaos units, you know, demons. Yeah. What do we do with demons in Chaos Warriors and stuff like that? There's huge implications for opening up further problems, and I'd rather they just kept it simple and just like, yeah, cool. They're an army entry from the Chaos Dwarfs book. They're in the Chaos Dwarfs book, so they work like any character from the Chaos Dwarfs book. But yeah, it is what it is, and it is exciting to see these things now could possibly be used to round out other factions rather than being, you know, possibly just dead entries.
If any of you guys have played 40K in the last few editions, I mean, you'll remember how proliferation of allies was like the worst thing for the game.
100%.
So,
100%. Yeah.
There was a lesson learned to be learned there that like this stuff still isn't cool or fun to play against.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least it isn't this isn't a directly an allies thing. This is a,
That's true.
Should you co-populate? Yeah. We have some clarification on what rules stack, what general USR stack, and what confer unit to unit. Stuff like Fire and Flee, a reserve move, are now being confirmed to be that if you were to join a character without those two, without that USR to a unit that does have that USR, as long as the majority of models in that unit have that USR, they would also benefit from it. This is actually a pretty decent buff to a lot of the maneuverability aspects of, I think, mostly Tomb Kings and Wood Elves come to mind.
Yeah. There's, they kind of have the biggest proliferation of reserve move and things like Fire and Flee and Evasive in the book. That said, there is like some like Vampire Counts also have a ton of reserve move.
Sure. That's true. I mean, they can give it to everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like these are like pretty decent buffs. Some people were already playing it this way, but like this kind of is a strong confirmation. They've also said that Swift Stride is the exception. Like everybody needs to have Swift Stride to get Swift Stride. If you have anybody in there that doesn't have it, they're not going to even try their damnedest to catch anyone.
And Vanguard. That was the other one they really made sure to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's big. Yeah, that is big and good. That clarification was definitely needed on Vanguard, especially.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Big change to close order has happened. If you have a unit or a model that has below five unit strength, they don't get the combat result bonus. So if you're down to four rank and file in your unit and they've never had close order, they won't confer the plus one combat res. Or if you have a single model that has, you know, closed order, but is unit strength less than five, they won't get it either. So where's the cutoff for this? I know a lot of chariots and a lot of cav are two and three, some monstrous infantry, some monstrous cavalry as well. What's usually the five cutoff for unit strength?
So like monstrous creatures and monstrous cav, it'll be two models. So you can't go because they'll be unit strength six.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monsters will have to have at least five wounds.
Sure.
What were we going to say, Danny?
Heavy chariots are unaffected by this because they already have unit strength five. So they'll continue to get plus one combat resolution. But like
beautiful.
Anything that's not a heavy chariot is also close order. Like this is a big FU to like, I feel like the smaller monsters, like the monstrous beasts, obviously.
Yeah.
Bargulfs, cockatrice, stuff like that, which is pretty sad for them.
Why do you think they'd made this change? What would be the impetus behind that?
I think there was a little bit of confusion out there, particularly with like lone characters as to if they got the close order benefit just because of the wording of close order when it came to like in order to get the plus one. There's like some a ranking wording in there that made people feel like if you don't have a rank, you don't get it. So this just kind of cleans it up and it says, hey, here's your minimum. It also puts a little bit of avoidance on abusing like certain like lone character situations where you took like singleton dragon ogres or singleton trolls and said, you know, I've got a close order for days.
Yeah. So. There's been a really impactful clarification to fly, but prior to that, we've now had it confirmed that virtually no special rules are cumulative unless specifically stated otherwise. So regen and frenzy do not stack. We're reasonable people, which we try to be. Let's not, you know, have frenzy seven on your unit
basement. I don't know. That sounds pretty cool, dude.
it does sound really, really cool. It's like the KO Kenning, like times two, times four, and stuff like that. But fly, what has happened to fly and why is this big?
Anything that modifies your movement characteristic also modifies your flight characteristic because it's just a characteristic. So it can go real high, real quick. Vampire Counts, love this change because it makes more dissensions better somehow.
Busted. Yeah, man.
So, some cool like connotations to this, especially with characters that are already really fast.
Yeah. Falcon, I think you were the biggest soapboxer for the nerf to random move or making random move more reasonable. Give us the TLDR there.
So they made two changes to random move. And then they clarified that random movers do give ground like everybody else. But the big changes here, one of them is bigger than the other. You cannot use random movement to get weird charges off. You can't get a flank or a rear charge as a random mover unless you start in the flank or rear of a unit. And this this ruling, I believe, will have other connotations that we're not going to fully see till later. But effectively, the big thing here is they're saying, because when a random mover bumps into a unit, it counts as charging. You have to follow all the rules of a charge in that situation. So I haven't gone too deep in it, but I have a strong feeling there's going to be other interactions that are going to come up differently now because of this ruling, because this counts as charging doesn't just apply to random movers, right? For this, that's the big thing, is you can't kind of do a loop-de-loop behind a unit. They also have specified that instead of a random mover having the must move the distance they roll, it's now move up to the distance you roll, which is actually a buff to random movers. To be fair, most people were just doing shenanigans, like just wheeling infinitely to say, like, here I am, I'm only like moving 3 inches because I just did a UE, right? So
yeah, I find that a little too judicious, that I kind of want to make it to this unit for a charge, but I rolled 1 inch, not far enough, so I'm only going to move 1 inch and just stop and then try again next turn. Is that what you mean? That seems a little too juicy to me.
There's no downsides
to random move.
I really wish they had gone more with the old rules for a random move, which was you had to go the full distance, but you didn't get wheels and stuff like that. You just pivoted and went, because that always felt more like how random move was supposed to work. Uncontrollable creatures, right? Like,
well, now they're entirely controllable.
Yeah,
it's just the amount of inches is out of your control, but the amount of inches is usually pretty good. And so, that's a little bit too much control for the randomness.
It feels that way, yeah. So those are kind of the big changes there to random movers.
A decent change to challenges. So it's weird, On reading of impact hits and stomps, where they, impact hits happen at initiative 10, and then declaring a challenge happens before, initiative 10, before the fight is even declared. But the impact hits and stomped couldn't occur in challenges because they couldn't be directed against an individual model. And so it was kind of counterintuitive the way this worked out. But now it's been confirmed that those things do occur into the challenge. So impact hits will go into challenges, same as stomps. This is, I don't know how I feel about this one. I think I'm probably neither way on it. Danny, is this actually impactful, or is this just
making the life easier? I think it's a terrible change. Honestly, No offense. Like, I get what they're trying to do, and like, I don't like discounting somebody's special rules because they did pay points for those and I want them to be able to use them. But at the same time, having a character that's in a unit with 5 or more rank and file models and stopping people from being able to stomp on those characters was really critical in beating dragons in combat with ranked up units.
Yeah.
And so this change makes ranked up units worse a little bit, which is already sad because ranked up units don't feel good a lot of times, and that's sad because you want to see that, because that's what Warhammer looks like, right? And so I don't like it from that respect, but I understand what the thought process was there, and it was a stupid finicky thing that would let, or like kind of finagly thing that lets you ignore that special rule that they had, and I don't like that either, so I get it.
All right, last one we'll talk about in the main rulebook before we move on. This is a clarification for ridden monsters and having one, I guess, unit entry that has multiple saves. You are directed to use the best save on the model at all times. And what that means is that if you take a piece of magic armor, I believe the best example that we have right now is the Armor of Ages on a Tomb King on a dragon.
Yeah,
Armor of Ages is only light armor, but the Tomb Dragon has a 4+, scaly skin or whatever the crap, bony boy armor. And because of that, if you have to use the better save, that means that the Armor of Ages doesn't kick in and you don't get any benefit from having taken that magic armor piece.
Because there's also an FAQ that says unless you're actually using the magic item, you don't get to use its rules.
Correct. If you're not taking the 6+ light armor save, you don't get whatever ward save regen or any other thing that it confers.
Yeah.
And so, and because you are forced to now take the best save possible, and yeah, you kind of cooked. So there's a couple of numbos, or what we call non-combos now, out there in the meta that we'll need to all negotiate in our own ways. Is this an impactful change? We should also say that one of the biggest, balance things that they've done is they've actually just made a ruling on the bedazzling helm that can only be taken, that now the bedazzling helm in particular, they went out of their way and they were like, okay, this is the final piece of the puzzle that people are using to get, you know, from a to a two up save. And so we're going to nerf that, and you can now only take that on infantry and cavalry, which I, chef's kiss, thank you very much. That's the kind of stuff I want to see. These two, I guess, the two biggest pieces that they're trying to do to disincentivize or to make the ridden monster more manageable. Does it go far enough, lads? And what do we think of the way they've gone about it?
You can go first, Danny.
Oh, okay, sure. I think that it's a step in the right direction. It's definitely not exhaustive, because this is not the only item that gives +1 to armor saves or lets you have a 2+ monster. But if those are like faction specific things, I'm somehow more okay with it, because it kind of becomes part of the identity of the faction to have that kind of combination of items. And I do like that part. I feel like I am, I'm excited to see, like, that Tomb King's Dragon was pretty annoying to fight. Like, if he's in combat with you, it's awful. Like, to try and get any wounds past him, especially if he has like the healing sword or something like that on him, it's rough. Anyway, so that stuff, I'm glad to see less of that stuff being, or more of that stuff kind of being taken out of the game. But at the same time, I don't know that it's a change in, like, it's not enough to like push those things to being probably more fair. I still think that like big monsters are probably still unfair a little bit. Like, they're probably a little too good, but it's getting better. And I appreciate the effort like made in this way to tone that stuff back. I really appreciate it, and it's a good gesture.
Nice. All right. Let us transition to talking about Ravening Hordes and Forces of Fantasy.
I don't want to cut you off, Adam, but like, there's a couple more things I want to talk about there. One is about the whole non-bow situation with like Armor of Ages or Valerian's Mantle and dragons. And that's just to say, I'm curious if they understood the full ramifications of what they were doing when they put that in.
Mm.
Because of the way the question was worded. So the way the question is worded it seems to indicate like, hey, I can take whichever armor save I want, right? And so if I want to, I can take the full plate save and then also get the magic benefits. And they're saying, no, you have to use one or the other. But they don't actually address that whichever is better thing, which is from the core rule book, page 204. Right. Yeah. So I'm curious as to if when they made this ruling, they considered that. Like, this is like rules as written, how it is now. Right. Mm. I'm wondering if when they wrote this, they thought, oh yeah, you can totally do Armor of Ages with a bone dragon. It's just, you now have a 6+ armor save or a 5+ armor save if you have a shield, rather than a 4+, excuse me, to get the benefit. But the core rulebook precludes you from doing that. There's also two other FAQ changes here that I'd love to just touch on very briefly, because I know it'll impact some people that listen to us. One is, the clarification that cannons and other template weapons can't be finagled in such a way that they accidentally hit a unit in combat, because that was something that some very frustrating people I've talked to, more than one of them, would get all in a tizzy about. And it was something that was handled in previous editions. So having that like written out that, yes, like if you're doing that, it's a dingus move and it doesn't work, is great. So you cannot place a cannon shot in such a way that it will probably hit an enemy unit. And by extension, you also can't use a flamethrower to do the same thing, or fire thrower, etc. The other one is the ruling that you cannot reroll miscasts.
Yes, that's correct.
Which is really big, a big penalty to high elves in particular, but any of those magic items. And And yeah, and also they've said you can't spectral doppelganger one-shot items, which I believe only impacts Empire for the Mace of Hellstorm or whatever it was. Anyway.
One attack items, right?
One attack items, yeah.
Yeah, so. That's fair enough. That is all fair enough stuff. The rerolling and miscast, I'm not sure why they bothered to write that in. It's kind of fine.
It's a very raw ruling they did where they're saying that a miscast is no longer a cast of the spell. It's not a failed cast. It's very raw, so I was very surprised that they went that way. But it's
cool. That's wild.
Cool with me, like.
Yeah, I mean, nerfing high elves is totally fine with me. It just seems like a weird thing to do.
All the time. Sorry, you may continue with your ravening hordes and fantasy.
Fantasy. All right, first place I want to start here. So we're gonna do a quick fire through, I guess, the factions in these, and if anybody changed, we will point it out. I want to start off with Bretonians because we've had a bit of a clarification to how. The Lance Formation works, and I feel like it's a nerf to Lance Formation. The question about Lance Formations and the fighting rank, and apparently if you are in Lance Formation and charge, every model in the opponent's fighting rank is assumed to be in base contact with you, regardless of your frontage, regardless of their frontage. That seems bad. So that means they get their full complement of attacks. So if they have three attacks per model, they get all three attacks each, even if they're not in base to base, because they've got in base to base with one guy. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing it this way, to be honest.
Yikes, indeed.
That's what the Lance rule says. Like, it says that they count as being in base to base. And then there was like, well, do the enemies count? Like, which was, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
So wait, why does anybody want to be in Lance Formation anymore?
It's pretty maneuverable and it does have other benefits. It's just going to really suck into like line hammer situations. And now with drill being changed or being confirmed to be the way it is, you're going to see some pretty unique situations where some units are going to lose combat. They're going to drill it to be super wide. And then if that Lance Formation chooses to follow up, they're in tremendously rough shape. So. Mm.
So we've also been clarified in Bretonians that the upgrades of, you know, virtues and honors do not confer to their mounts. So Pegasus, it's a little bit of a hit to Peg Knights, but most people, I don't believe were playing it that the Pegs got the virtues and the stuffs of the riders and things, unless I'm incorrect.
There was definitely a lot of people doing it with the Hippogriff for the heroic killing blow Hippogriff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was something that I assumed wasn't supposed to work. I just wasn't going to, if you were running a Hippogriff, I wasn't going to tell you. you're not running 14 Pegasus at me. You can have your Hippogriff do a cute thing, but
yeah. Anybody
out of here now?
Anybody want to jump in on a faction they're above and on top of?
Wood Elves got some interesting changes.
Yeah,
particularly Bow of Lorin.
That's such a bizarre change.
I didn't think they would go with this ruling. Like I expected. I had not been playing Bow of Lorin to be the Mongo Bongers situation some people seem to think it was, where they were shooting like four or five Hail of Doom arrows a turn with it.
Yeah.
I did not believe that was anywhere close to how it should have been worded. But what they've said now is when you shoot the Bow of Lorin, if you choose to take any magical arrows, only one of them will ever be magic. The shot, only one of their shots will be magical. So you can't like quadruple shot Arcane Bodkins or Hagbane arrows any longer. And this is like a pretty decent nerf to a weapon that was kind of just cute to begin with. It wasn't being taken competitively.
Yeah.
The only shot that doesn't get a lot of impact out of this is Swift Shiver arrows. Because they're going to maintain the same profile anyway. And you're just getting one extra shot, where some people were playing that you got four extra shots if you took Swift Shiver, which was crazy. On top of also, if you took Hail of Doom, then you got eight Hail of Doom shots, which was even crazier to imagine. You'd think that would work that way. But anyway, so that's gone. We also see a confirmation that if you take Wood Elves as allies, they don't get a free forest. It's only if they're your main army. They said that Waystalkers can't use the Ruby Ring of Ruin to snipe characters, which was something that some people were doing. And I even considered it. I hadn't done it yet, but I definitely made some lists thinking about it. And they're just sick. And between this and the hag tree fetish change, I believe we've kind of got firm confirmation on how bound items work now too, in general, which is cool.
Nice. Beastmen got a couple of changes. One of their biggest, I guess, ranged output damage dealing combos got nerfed, if not, I think, killed off entirely, which was the hag tree fetish no longer procs on the Ruby Ring of Ruin. And I was just building off that because it was a similar thing to what you're talking about with the Wastewalkers. What happened here? What changed? And of course, there's the summoning in the Vile Tide and stuff like that. Anybody above and beyond this? Because I don't know a lot of details. I just know it was real bad to be on the receiving end.
So Hag Tree Fetish is still like an amazing arcane item that lets you reroll any wounds you do with a magic missile spell for your Bray Shaman.
Yep.
So what people were doing is they would take their Bray Shaman, they'd give them Vile Tide, which is 66 strength 2 hits that have no saves allowed. And you reroll all the wounds on that. So you're killing dragons. Well, you're not killing, but you're generally like ripping a dragon apart with it. And it's Beastman's answer to stuff like that. But then you would also take Ruby Ring and you'd take another magic missile spell from whatever lore you had.
Like probably Elementalism is the best one with
wind, So you'd end up with Vile Tide, Wind Blast, and that, and you're pumping out like an absolute crazy amount of damage. So the Hag Tree Fetish saying that that confirms that bound items are own, and some of the other rulings that we had, like with Waystalkers, bound items are only impacted by things that say they specifically say they impact bound items. So no more using like Engines of the Gods to get plus one on your cast with a bound item because it doesn't specify bound items get impacted. There's like a number of abilities people were using to buff their bound items that basically don't work anymore. I think on top of my head, I think only does the casket specifically say bound items work?
It does.
Yeah. So that's the only one I can think of on the top of my head states it affects bound items. I think it's a great change. It's a little more intuitive than how people had been playing it.
So is this another nerf to Engines of the Gods?
I mean, it's a nerf to Lizardmen, which they took a lot of them in this FAQ.
Yeah, you guys got kicked real bad.
got kicked in the nuts a lot. Yeah.
Just quickly touching on the fact that dwarves did not get an FAQ in any way directly to them, but I believe they're one of the biggest buffers of the drilled clarifications.
Yeah.
And then I think Tomb Kings, something about chariots.
The Tomb Guard chariots say they have a shield, so people are asking if they have a 3+ and not a 4+, even though it says like what their armor value is. And then also, they did clarify, thank you, that you can't do the super hit with the Necro Sphinx anymore.
It's only a single
like with
single
all your attack, attacks,
yeah.
You can just
Any others you guys can think of from the Ravening Hordes and Forces of Fantasy? Was relatively light on. In fact, relatively light on.
No, I think that covers like all the big stuff. Laurels of Victory, they confirmed works the way it should and doesn't do nothing, because the way it was originally worded, it like there was only a couple scenarios where it would give you a plus one combat res. So they changed how it's worded. And they've also made sure that it doesn't, it's not affected by your mount's attacks. So it's better, but also slightly worse, in that most people were only taking it on like demigriff characters, and now you probably won't see it anymore. So
Chaos Steeds got counter charge. I thought that was a good change for Chaos Warriors.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that is big. That's cool. All right, let's hit over to the Legacy Army changes. I can safely say that Ogres must be a perfect book because the bestest, and they have received no changes as far as I'm aware. And seeing as we don't really benefit from drilled or any other major changes, essentially untouched. But let's start with Lizardman, Peter. Lay it down on us. Why did they do this, and where do you go from here?
Yeah, so Lizardman took a lot of hits. I think they had three or four changes. And the thing about the legacy ones is unless you used a PDF comparing tool, you wouldn't really know what the exact changes were. Unfortunately, I would hope this would be changed in the future if they have to do this again. Although given that there's legacy, these are legacy armies, I think this will be the only touch anything gets. Number one, and this is the biggest thing, is Slan Mage Priests are now monstrous creatures with close order. So this is a huge downgrade for Slan Mage Priests. Prior to this, they were considered monstrous infantry. They didn't have close order. But this let them do a lot of really cool stuff that I think offset just how expensive they are. So like Lizardmen don't have any other access to leadership 9 other than the Slan Mage Priest. So having a large target that was also a monstrous infantry meant it got a lone character protection. So you could kind of freely move around the board as long as you had skinks and things in your way in order to pop out your leadership bubble. You could be casting spells with your large target and not have to worry about line of sight. And you also had 360 vision. So you could do really cute, things to avoid combats, or if you were running like an ethereal Ginsu Knife Slan, like I sometimes like to do, you could create really interesting charge arcs that really caught opponents off guard. And that's basically all gone. So now the only character protection you get is from Temple Guard. So even though you are a fly 8, creature, you're kind of locked to Temple Guard unless you're taking an ethereal Slan against a lot of armies. Like, you're not going to be moving away from your units if you're into dwarves or wood elves in particular, or high elves that are taking Sisters of Avalorn, because you're just going to get shot up. You have an arc now, like you have a front arc, so you no longer have a lot of the benefits you used to. Movement is really limited because you're a monstrous creature with close order. So you don't even have lumbering, so you don't get that free pivot at the end. You're just kind of stuck however you have to shift yourself. It's just kind of a big loss all around. I don't think this makes the Slan unplayable, but it really hurts the faction as a whole. Because that build is much harder to play now, especially late game. If you're playing a close late game, like you're in real rough shape with the Slan now. Other changes they made, that's the one that's kind of the one that hurts my heart the most. Skink Chiefs, they've made sure that you can't give poison to like your whole Stegadon now. It's an asterisk poison attacks. So it only gives his unit or gives himself poison and whatever weapons he's carrying. So no more poison stomp, poisoned like Stegadon punches and bites. They clarified Monsoon to be a 15-inch range, not a 12-inch range. So that was a tiny buff given the nerf to Slan. And I think they fixed like Chameleon Skinks because they, for some reason, their champions were strength 4.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the unit were strength 2. So
the strength of 2 skinks for no reason. Okay, so the other big changes that I can see in the legacy factions was mostly the vampire counts. Is that correct?
I think Skaven and Vampire Counts and Dark Elves all had some good changes.
Okay, Dark Elves, Danny, hit me.
Oh, Adam. I do like the stupidity change, which is kind of a stealth like buff for my army, so I can just stand there if I want to, right?
Yeah.
So that's cool. But the big changes here were that Cursing Word went to setting someone's ballistic skill and weapon skill to 1 to minus 1 ballistic skill and weapon skill.
Not quite the same thing, is it?
No. It was really cool hitting with all my stuff on 2s in combat and then like making them hit me back on 5s. It was a really good spell, but it's a hex that has a 12-inch range. So like you have to kind of work for that to make it happen. That was a big bummer. And then the other one that they did was Armor of Blood, which gives you plus 1 armor save for every model that you kill, is now restricted purely to infantry and cavalry models. So you can no longer take it on like a Manticore Rider or like the Cauldron of Blood is a bummer for that, I guess. If you believe that you could take magic armor on that character, that's probably not the case though now. Anyway, but yeah, both that those are those. That's a bummer because it was a nice 40-point item that gave you another protective item and a way to get like a monstrous creature to a 2+ armor save.
Fair. All right, vampire counts, Peter. Give us the lowdown.
So vampire counts, a couple of changes. On the slight downside, Blood Knights don't give AP 1 to their horses anymore.
No, pour out a little thimble full of nothing.
Yeah, Hellish Vigor had, like, because Hellish Vigor had basically 4 casting values in its description. It's now confirmed to be the lower casting values, so it's a 7-10 instead of a 9-12 or 10-12. The probably the biggest quote unquote nerf to the army is that newly dead or freshly dead rule, which let you increase the size of a unit of zombies past their starting size, is now capped at that unit's actual maximum size. So previously you could make a zombie unit infinitely large over the course of a game if you wanted to, by just constantly rezzing new zombies into it. Now you're going to be capped at a size of 40, which does impact a couple of the builds that I'd seen where people were running like 3 or 4 max size zombie units and then just trying to like sit back and make them 60 or 70 deep. Now you'll be probably seeing people go down to 1 or 2 units of zombies that start at say 25 or 30. And then they'll run Graveguard and other stuff instead because the book is just so good. But yeah, those are kind of the key vampire changes as I remember them.
Beautiful. A little bit of a change to Skaven Verminous Valor, which was the ability that allowed heroes to ditch challenges, if I remember right.
It lets you ditch anything. And it's very strong.
Yeah.
As written. And I'm surprised they didn't change it further. So just for clarification for people listening, if they don't understand, so Verminous Valor lets you retire at any point during a combat. The problem with it, rules as written, is there's 2 definitions for retiring. One is for retiring from a challenge, which is you get a challenge declared against you and you choose to decline it. And your opponent says, okay, well, you're retired and you have to go to the back and you stay at the back until combat has ended. The other version of retired is if there's too many characters in your front rank, a model has to retire until there's space for them to come back. There's no other definition of retired, so we don't know which one we're supposed to use with Verminous Valor or the damsel/prophetess version of this, and it's not clarified. So technically, right now, you could use Verminous Valor every turn that you're in combat. So you could have your Gracier with a fell blade, or your assassin with a chieftain with a fell blade, jump into combat at initiative 9 or 10 on the charge, smack your opponent with the fell blade, then say, okay, I'm using Verminous Valor before you fight me back, run to the back.
Yep.
Then next turn, you can make way because you're still allowed to move through ranks. To do it again every turn until they challenge you out of it.
Disgusting.
They did nerf Fellblade, by the way. It's now not strength 10. It's strength user strength +3, so it's going to be strength 7 most of the time. And you have a 1 in 3 chance, or sorry, of taking a wound instead of a 1 in 6.
That's significantly worse. I mean, there are so few sources of strength 10 in the game.
Yeah,
that and that's kind of been the identity of that weapon for as long as I can remember, that it was like the strength 10 weapon on the low strength army, which was the LOL, but it will kill you eventually. So
yeah, fair enough.
And that will kill you even more harder, and he doesn't even hit that hard. Well, as hard.
I'm thinking maybe they intend for you to be able to Verminous Valor every turn, which is fine. It's Skaven, I think, need the help, and
I think they do as well.
And it is at least. You can play around it to a degree now, because they can't do it outside out of a challenge, which sucked before.
So at least now you can kind of trap them, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's one other change to Skaven, and I really want to talk about it because I think it changes. It may define how the magic item thing works that we're still a little confused about magic armor. They changed the wording of the Warpstone armor.
Yep.
And the way they changed it is very interesting. So it's now worded. Bring it up.
Oh, Peter, so, your obsession with armor.
Everybody's obsession with armor, man.
Love like, it. He loves it.
I do love it. But so Verminous Valor, the Warpstone armor, previously it just said Warpstone armor is a suit of armor, which could be purchased and worn by a wizard. And it didn't say anything else. So they added, even if they do not have the option to be equipped with armor, a shield, or barding without penalty. Why would they specify shield and barding?
Yeah, why would they specify any of it, to be honest? Is that to say that because this has made such distinctive clarifications that we should assume that's the case for, and this is a precedent for all characters?
Yeah, so is this like mundane equivalent thing? So long as you can take any kind of piece of armor, then you can take it. So can dragon ogres take magic shields?
Yeah.
Based on the wording of this, I'm skeptical because of how the rule book is worded. I think a better like read of it is that if you can take a shield, you can take a magic shield, barding to barding, and then any kind of like chest piece, you can take a chest piece. It doesn't matter the type of quote unquote chest piece. But them wording it like this has made me dubious. I've become of the dude. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there to cause a stir, dubiousism.
It is a dube.
Is the dube what kids are saying these days instead of sus when we were all playing that game we were all playing in lockdown, whatever it was, with the sus people and the things?
Chinese checkers.
That's the one. That's it. Yeah. Sus Chinese checkers is now being formed into the dube. Into the Doob gang. You remember the Doob gang. You're ringleader of the Doob. Anyway, moving on. Biggest winners and losers. I think we have, it should be pretty apparent for us to see. I think the biggest gosh diggity darn loser is Lizardman. I have no idea why they were just like, you know that faction that we're not supporting that, you know, F them. Let's kick him like three times in the balls. And that is exactly what happened to Lizardman, I believe. Do you disagree, Peter?
Yeah, I think they're probably the biggest loser of anybody, of any of the factions. It's not any great.
Any other big losers we can think of?
No, I don't think anybody else is. Well, Dark Elves, I feel bad because that spell was awesome.
The spell was sick.
It was like the coolest thing. Honest to God, it was the coolest thing in the army. And then like, I don't even know, my desire to play the army is drained due to that. Like,
Man. I also feel like Empire players that were assholes, they suffer greatly from this. If you weren't an asshole, you're fine, man. You're just fine.
Yeah.
You're good.
I love that. All right. Biggest winners. Vampire counts, even though they had some nerfs, I think their buffs are enough that I think they're the one of the biggest winners. Mostly the fly change, the fact that you can just modify fly up and up and up and up and up really adds the dynamic element that army was kind of missing. And I don't think the zombie change is kind of that significant. I think it just changed the internal balance and they actually start taking some more reasonable units and have a more fleshed out list rather than here are my zombies, here are my mortis engines, here's my blood knights and the army.
Also,
we were talking about it in the Discord. I think that it's you take Blood Knights and you take like a fat unit of like 40 Graveguard with great weapons.
Yeah, I think that's real good.
I think that's terrifying.
I also think that there's a spell that gives you Fly 12 and you can make that real silly now.
Oh, yeah, man.
I think you can make that real silly because unfortunately Mortis Engines don't say maximum 10 for the characteristic unlike Van Hels does.
Yeah.
So having like a Fly 14 or Fly 15 unit, pretty silly.
Also, with Fly getting, I believe, overall buffed, the things that turn off the ability to fly, you know, those ones per game items or whatever, they kind of get a little bit of a buff as well. They might be more meta apt post this as also. We did see probably like a 10% hit to mounted creatures overall, like the mounted Griblies.
If that, 10%
knock. Probably not I would not say 20%, maybe between 5% and 15%.
It hits specific ones real hard, like the Chaos Dragon.
Exactly.
And I'll be fair, like if you're following like the small amount of event results we're seeing, a lot of people had already kind of pivoted away from the Bedazzling Helm on the Chaos Dragon. They were just taking the 3+ armor save to get a better weapon, like an Ogre Blade.
Sure. Actually do the kill death thing.
So it's not a massive change, but it's still significant enough that they thought to do it.
All right. Any other big winners we can think of? I think dwarfs of any stripe.
Yeah, Chaos Dwarves. I think Chaos Dwarves are huge winners, and then dwarves are decent winners here.
Well, yeah, dwarves were like, we're not going to touch any of your army, actual units. But we are going to make it so that your every unit that has drilled, which is a lot of your good units, are just absolute superstars all of a sudden. So you are, it's just so funny that they're like the slowest, most dynamic unit in the game. the slowest, most dynamic rank and file infantry.
They're
the most trained infantry, though. Honestly, it's pretty thematic. Like, I think that's cool. Like,
I think it's pretty sick. It's maybe there's a little bit too much of it in those books because, like I said, there are some armies. there are a lot of armies that have like zero access to it, and then they're like, now we can have drilled dot list.
Okay, ogre player with vanguard dot list.
Shush. At least I still have characters that are good.
Oh, yeah. Too soon, man.
What is missing from this? Like, what is missing from this FAQ? What did we expect to see here that isn't here?
Armor clarification, I guess. Yeah. That would be the one thing I was thinking.
Yeah. That's the only big one I can think of.
Yeah, well, and Plague of Rust, but I think Plague of Rust was too late. Like, I think that came up, like, this was already done, and people were like, how the heck did we miss that Plague of Rust is maybe the best spell in the game by a million?
Well, straight up, I have seen a lot of people nodding and being like, RAW, that's exactly how it works, but we're not doing that.
Oh, yeah, like, I know, that's how I'm doing majority. It.
Yeah.
But I've had some concerning talks where now I'm like, are you guys really just going to do it? Are you going to pull the trigger and be like, raw is raw? They've done it twice now in this last FAQ where they went, guess what? Raw is raw, dudes, live with it. And so like, if we get another FAQ in 3 or 6 months and they're like, Plague of Rust works the way that you didn't expect, like, I'm not going to have a heart attack. I'm immediately going to be much happier about my Lizardmen again. but yeah, like, and definitely happier about my Wood Elves. Like,
that spell is so busted that the community might just pull the Jeremy Clarkson, oh no, anyway, and ignore that. That might be a line in the sand that we, the community, are like, let's not play Plague Rust the meta because it will be the auto take inclusion in every single list. And armies that don't have access to that tree will just be bad armies all of a sudden. And it will feel real horrible.
I don't know if it'll go that bad because, like, it's not like it's a guaranteed cast. You can dispel it, et cetera, et cetera. But I see your point. Like, I'm not arguing that it might be a little too strong. I guess it also depends on, like, if the meta keeps evolving to be ridden monsters are the way to go with multiple saves, right?
That's fair.
But yeah. Anyway, it's a cute little thing that I'm hopeful to see an answer to. There's a bunch of other like little things that that are kind of faction specific that come up every now and then. But I believe those two. Oh, and resing models. What happens if you don't have room?
That's
the other one I would like an answer to.
That's a good question. Sure. Yeah.
All right, Danny. What is your single favorite change from the FAQ?
I would say for me, it's the drilled clarification. I think that adds some cool dynamicism to like some infantry units that are normally a little slow and cumbersome. And so I like changes that make that stuff better.
Good call. Peter, what about yourself?
I like the bound item stuff, mainly because it has further implications than what the one question asked. So I like having that.
Nice. I'm not sure if I have a favorite one. I think they're all pretty good. I do genuinely like the random move. The random move, I feel like they gave and taketh away. So you can do less shenanigans with getting into combat, but your random move is now no longer a random move. You just roll the dice and you get to move. You just have a movement value that is generated by a dice roll. There's nothing random about it. Random is the result. Then you can move judiciously within that confines. I do genuinely like the armor change, like the for the ridden monsters being like, you know, you can't have it all. You actually have to, you know, take one save, and if you have a magic armor, whatever. I do think the runoff of that is that people on a ridden monster that has a four up or better just don't take a magic armor, instead take a talisman for their of protection, most yeah. likely. They just yeah. slap down their talisman ward save, they take the decent armor save, and they don't bother. Because there are a good amount of ridden monsters. I mean, I'm thinking of myself on Stonehorns, where it already has a four up, and I can't really get better than a four up on a Ogre Tyrant anyway, so stuff it. I'll take the four up and just go for a five up ward save and leave it at that. All right. Closing thoughts, gentlemen. We're going to pontificate about how much joy and or not joy we have gotten from this, because I genuinely went to 11 out of 10 when I was going through this FAQ for the first time. I just had a spark of joy and excitement about the game when I saw that it existed. I was like, oh shit, this is exciting. This is, oh, I don't know what to do with myself now. I need to sit down. Because it's stupendous. It's just stupendous to see them support the game and in such a holistic way. But Danny, what are your thoughts, brother?
Overall, I think they made some really good changes. I'm excited to kind of play the game more with some of these clarifications. I think like almost all of them are pretty good. I think this was a great effort, and I'm really happy to see this kind of production of material out of Games Workshop.
Petey, baby.
They did it.
They son of a bitches, they did it.
They did
crazy,
it.
Crazy fools. Do we want to do a rating system on this show? Do we want to implement some kind of rating system as we do as some of us may do on other shows? Where
5 out of 7,
beautiful. We did it. Congrats. All right, moving on. But no. So there's a grading system that I've implemented on another one of my shows where we rate things on two metrics. If we're reviewing like an army book, we'll rate out of 10 how happy we believe the players of said book will be happy with it. You know, one being holy shit, burn it with fire. Why did they do this to us? And 10 being sweet, merciful Jesus, I could get years of joy out of this. I think we should do that for this FAQ. Out of 10, Danny, how happy are you with it?
I'd say like an 8.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I'm an 8.
I thought you were going to stick with your 5 out of 7, you weird unit. But 5 out of 7 is pretty much an 8 out of 10. Pretty much.
Pretty much.
I'm the same. I'd even go one higher. I'd say 9 out of 10. Good. So keen, so happy.
Yeah, 888 is bad because then Korn shows up. So
exactly.
Let's get a 9 in there.
Yeah. Can't have it. Got to have some change. Anyway, that is going to close us out for this part one. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed it at home. Hopefully we are maintaining our position as the place that you guys can come to keep up with the game as it is ever evolving. And hopefully if you have enjoyed this episode, you'll join us over on part two at Patreon with that old world charm. Gentlemen, anything you'd like to plug? Any other shows we'd like to mention? I would like to say Squarebase is doing some great productions at the moment, some great shows. You should go check those guys out. Where Are My Dwellers Below? Get off your asses. I miss you. Please come back. And anybody else?
I think if you are listening to this show and you're not a dingus, you should also watch Hellstorm Mikey, because Hellstorm Mikey, he doesn't just do Old World. He does 40K, and he's a clickbait asshole. But he is a genuinely kind and beautiful soul who loves JoJo more than anything else. And I know that
he explains so much.
He has somehow attracted some just not kind people into his chat when it comes to the Old World. And so if you listen to us and you like to bring joy to other people's lives, go bring joy to Mikey, because he doesn't deserve that. He deserves the best in all of us, even if he thought that it was cool to do like 8 decapitating strikes a turn.
With his necro sphinx.
With his necro sphinxes. and then wrote it all in caps lock to get people going. Just like, be kind to one another. Be kind to Mikey. Don't be kind to Val. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard agree on both accounts.
We can all agree with that.
Yeah.
Danny, anybody you want to plug?
Yeah, if you out. Haven't been, if you haven't been listening to, I've been watching. The Mountain does so many battle reports, I'm really happy that I can turn on YouTube and watch Warhammer Fantasy again. Mm-hmm. So, like, consider supporting him. Great dude. Really fun. Thematic battle reports. They do a great job. Armies look good. Tables look good. It's a good time. So check it out if you want to watch some Warhammer.
Beautiful. Could not agree more. It is a damn good time to be playing the Old World. It's only going to get bigger and better from here. So hopefully you guys will join us over in part two. And if not, see us next week, which is most likely to be a Vampire Counts army book review. Should be very exciting, especially seeing as we estimate that they are a top three faction in the game. And some say even the top number one in the game. So we'll see how that goes. And if not, hopefully you'll join us over on part two. Thank you very much for supporting us, and we'll see you there.
You've been listening to That Old World Charm with those charming chaps, Adam, Danny, and Peter the Falcon. Thanks ever so much. Terrio.